This is what people want. This is what I want. Now, which one of you is going to go out and get it for me?
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to another fine edition of the Body Slam Podcast right here at GerWeck.net. That is GERWECK.net. Make sure you check out the GerWeck Report with Steve GerWeck, the webmaster himself, and Frank D. We got a lot of news to talk about today in the world of professional wrestling. However, I do need to mention that I am not joined by my usual co-host, Shane Daly, or Todd Graham. Shane Daly's doing his thing with the Elks. Todd Graham's doing his thing with, well, the jobby job. But I have a guest on here today. A good friend of mine named Adam Cohn. He's been asking me to jump on the podcast for a little while, so this is actually going to be his tryout, if you will, to see if maybe we can get him on the podcast in the future. But also, Adam is going to be starting his own podcast, you know, in the weeks and months ahead. So, Adam, say hi to the listeners here at GerWeck.net and tell them a little about yourself.
Greetings, listeners at GerWeck.net. My name is Adam Cohn, and I am so thrilled to finally be on the Body Slam podcast with you, Atlee. And I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to finally be able to do this with you. So, just a little bit about me. I've not been a wrestling fan my entire life. But about 5 years ago, I think it was WrestleMania 25 was the first show I actually watched. There was a whole gathering us over here at the house, and that really started it for me. And then I quickly did, like, over the next 2 years, I did a lot of background research into wrestling and still doing a little bit more info in the Attitude Era and some of the mega wrestlers back there. But it's just so cool to see the transitions from what wrestling was to what wrestling is today, considering, like, production value and just a bunch of other things. But I'm so excited to be talking with you today.
And, that's actually one of the reasons, Adam, that I wanted to have you on the show is because you haven't been a wrestling fan that long. Now, a lot of people might say, oh, well, how could somebody who's only been a wrestling fan for 5 years possibly have anything interesting to say? Well, I say poo-poo on that, but also, Adam, being that you've only been a fan for 5 years, you actually bring a fresh perspective to professional wrestling as far as, you know, the genre as an art form. You're going to see things a lot differently because we're currently in the midst of a whole new generation of wrestling fans right now where they didn't watch, you know, 80s wrestling, you know, when it was in its infamy. You didn't watch much stuff there in the 90s. They didn't watch the Attitude Era. They've heard about it, but didn't watch it. What they know about wrestling is within the last 5 years or so. So I'm very happy to have you and hear your perspective on a lot of things. But let's get started, my friend. I think the big news, so I'm heading out of SummerSlam. SummerSlam has come and gone. The big news coming out of SummerSlam is Brock Lesnar annihilating John Cena and in the process becoming the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. But it basically wasn't a professional wrestling match. It was the closest thing you'd ever get to a squash match in a world title main event. Adam, what were your, as a fan, what were your thoughts seeing just a total annihilation as opposed to the usual back and forth drama fest that we see in main events?
Well, come to think of it, when you hear the name Brock Lesnar, the first time I heard him was in UFC. Being a recent getting into the business type of deal, I heard Brock Lesnar, I thought, okay, he did that wrestling thing beforehand. Oh, but he was UFC champion. So for me, going in and seeing what Brock and Cena did back in 2012, and now seeing, which, let's face it, it was a glorified squash match. And I don't think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's ever been a squash match in a major championship match like that. Was the last time closest Mark Henry back when he was facing Randy Orton and had that, like, insane beast-like push that Brock's having and just went in, destroyed Orton, got the title, and went to hold on to it? Brock went a level above that. I've never seen someone manhandled like that. And you can think the promo that Triple H cut. I've never seen someone manhandled. Yes, we understand that. But when he was saying that, he wasn't lying. When was the last time you seen Cena get mauled like that? It was a mauling.
I mean, the way I look at it is there's and actually, I like what you said, Adam, about the first time you heard about Brock Lesnar is the UFC, because, you know, a lot of people that visit Gerwick.net, they're very familiar with Brock Lesnar from his WWE run back in 2002, 2003, and a little bit of 2004, where a lot of fans now, being that it's 2014, there's an even flow. A lot of fans have heard about Brock Lesnar for the first time in the UFC, because they heard about his WWE background, but they saw him and experienced what Brock Lesnar was all about in the UFC. And when they saw him in the UFC, it was just an unrestricted ass-kicker. And then now they see him back in the genre that made him a name, and it's kind of like, wow, you can't have Brock Lesnar running the ropes, taking bumps for every little clothesline. You have to make him like a shoot fighter as close as you can. So I really think that does lend itself to telling a good story, because a lot of people were complaining that they were bored with the match because Lesnar just kept on throwing German suplex after German suplex after German suplex, and they figured he should have switched it up. He should have done maybe a belly-to-back suplex here and there, you know, something different, but no. Out of all the suplexes you could do, the German suplex hurts the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think him just going back to that one move, time in and time out, just screamed, I am going to kill John Cena.
Oh, I do not disagree with you. That match went over exactly as it needed to. Yeah, it may have been boring for like 20 minutes because it was literally just Lesnar just mauling Cena. And I was totally fine with that. But the way it happened, the way he did it, 16 German suplexes, for that stat to come out and them talking about the 16 of them, yeah, it needed to go over exactly as that. You needed to put him on that next level. I mean, you had him beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which, let's face it, none of us saw that coming. Not one person. The ref didn't even know what was going on. You had that was so tightly knit, and you established him as, okay, he's the next guy. And then you have him going into SummerSlam. And if you follow whatever you do right here at Gerwick.net, or you follow wherever else you hear the wrestling rumors, you knew Lesnar was getting a title shot at SummerSlam, and whoever it was getting fed to Lesnar. Because if Lesnar didn't win at SummerSlam, what was the point of him breaking The Undertaker's undefeated streak? It would invalidate it. At least in my opinion.
That was the consensus going into SummerSlam. However, Vince McMahon, when he books his shows, that guy has shown over the years that he does not care about legacy or things being diluted or anything. That guy is going to do whatever he wants. And he made the decision, with less than a week before WrestleMania, to decide, hey, I want Lesnar going over on Taker. What they planned before leading into WrestleMania was Taker going over. So Vince doesn't care. I mean, if Vince really thought, hey, I want John Cena going over in this match, if I want my WWE champion to beat the UFC champion again, he would have had no problem booking that. But he just really, and I guarantee you, his decision did not include, oh, well, I can't have Lesnar lose because he just beat the streak.
Oh, I can see that, but then again, this can go into a whole other debate for another time, and maybe we can get into this on another podcast, because we just got so much to get to today. But
one more thing I do want to mention, Adam, and just tell me your thoughts on this, is I did like the match placement of Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton in the co-main event spot, because normally that's reserved for a Divas match to simply cool down the audience before the main event. But I like the reason they put the match in the co-main event spot, because for all intents and purposes, Randy Orton and Roman Reigns was the last professional wrestling match of the evening, because Lesnar just slaughtered John Cena. And I think if you would have put a Divas match on before, and then the slaughter that Lesnar pulled off on John Cena, I don't know if I think people would have had a little bit more of a sour taste in their mouth. So it's kind of like, if you didn't like this Lesnar Cena match, at least you got Roman Reigns and Randy Orton near the end of the card. And I gotta tell you, that match with Lesnar and Cena, that could have gone wrong in so many ways. Like, when somebody laid out that match, like, this is what we want, that could have gone wrong in so many ways, and that could have just stunk up the place. It could have gone down as the worst match in history, but credit to the ages that laid out the match, and credit to John Cena and Brock Lesnar for pulling something off like that, especially John Cena, because you can think about it. If that scenario of saying, oh, you're going to get your ass kicked for 15 minutes is going to be presented to Hogan, Austin, Rock, guess what? They're saying no.
Oh, they're saying
They're not even thinking twice. They're saying hell no.
Yeah, they're saying no every single time. And to just to cover the point from the other time, too, we can get into a whole Vince versus Triple H, creative control. One wants to do things one way. One wants to do things another way. I get tons of opinions on that. Maybe that's something we can do for another time. But I can completely agree what you're saying. When Vince does the booking, he doesn't care. He's shown that in the past. From the point of kudos to Cena for saying, yeah, let's do it. Go ahead and beat me up for 15 minutes. Decimate me. Take the title. You deserve it. You know, you've done it. Kudos to him. You're right. Hogan, Austin, Rock probably would have said, no, I'm not doing it. But, yeah, Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, what a match. When you let Orton go, and everyone is so critical of, like, Cena and critical of Orton because they get their quote-unquote five moves of doom, as they're being called. Orton can go. You let Orton go with someone like Reigns, they show they can put on one heck of a match. It may have not been A-plus quality match, but it was definitely B-plus to A-minus. And you put that as the co-main event, all of us looked at doing, they were watching SummerSlam and were like, why is this in this spot? And then when you saw Lesnar Cena, it made sense. Everything about that made sense because the cooldown match was the last match on the card. It was switch swapped. The co-main event, which is usually the cooldown, became the main event. The main event became the co-main event. It was beautiful the way it was done.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And that actually gives us a pretty good transition to our next topic, The Shield. Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins. And to kind of touch on the match, I really liked how it was laid out because Roman Reigns has kind of been running through everybody more or less since he's been in WWE. And I liked the story they told the match because it was his first test. It was the first time he was actually put in trouble, and it's fitting that it was the Viper, Randy Orton, that it was the first one to give him his real test, and Roman Reigns had to come back from the jaws of defeat, hit the Superman punch, come at him with the spear, 1, 2, 3. So it kind of told you a story that, okay, Roman Reigns is the real deal. He's not just a guy that can dominate people. He's a guy that not only can kick your ass, but he's a guy that can take a beating and come back from that. So it told a wonderful story. But speaking of the other two members of the Shield, Adam, for my money, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose had matched the night at SummerSlam. And then they main event Raw the very next night, and they have what I think right now is match of the year.
Oh, there's no question in my mind. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't even know what one of those two matches, if not both of them, candidates for match of the year. Those were flawless. WWE, congratulations for finding these two talents. You have two megastars on your hands. People keep talking about Roman Reigns and this. He looks the part. He fits the part. He's got the get out of my way, I'm going to beat you up type of deal. And then you have Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose that put on a phenomenal match at SummerSlam. That lumberjack match, the way it was a mess. I couldn't figure out why they picked that stipulation at all. Some thought it should have been for the briefcase. Others thought it should have been something else. But it's like, a lumberjack match. How is this going to work when they've essentially, as the Shield, pissed everybody off in the locker room? How is this going to work?
Well, actually, I thought the same thing at first, Adam. That I personally thought at first it should have been a steel cage match. But on SmackDown, Dean Ambrose, when he chose the lumberjack stipulation, he actually covered it perfectly in his promo where he said, hey, Seth, you and I have been a lot of enemies in this locker room over the last 2 years, so I want a lumberjack match. That way, the same enemies that we've made are going to surround the ring, and they're going to make sure we stay in the ring because they're going to want to see each of us kill each other, basically. Oh, and yeah. I thought that was genius.
Oh, it was absolutely genius. I was just a little concerned when they were getting up and they were in the stands and what looked like someone was being thrown off the railing. I'm like, where are the lumberjacks? Someone get the lumberjacks over here to catch them. But they put on two phenomenal matches. And yeah, to be honest, I like their Raw match slightly better, but they both can be up there for match of the year.
I mean, I love the finish to the Raw match with the curb stomp inside the cinder blocks.
Oh my goodness, that was fantastic.
I mean, and that's pretty much the way to get Dean Ambrose off TV so he can film that WWE Studios movie while Seth Rollins is still making waves and doing his thing on television. One of the things I think we should talk about as far as the Shield is the three members is right now, if you read the reports on Gorick.net and elsewhere on the internet, all signs are pointing that Roman Reigns is going to be the guy, and he's going to be the chosen one, if you will, and wrestle Lesnar for the title at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That's the plan. However, Roman Reigns, he's doing a very good job in his role right now, but at the same time, he's not knocking him dead by any means.
No.
And Dean Ambrose is getting a much bigger crowd reaction than Roman Reigns at this stage of the game. And there have been some reports on Gorick.net that WWE officials feel that Dean Ambrose isn't ready for the main event spotlight, which you could go back and forth all day as to whether you think that's true or not. And if you had to book WrestleMania's main event today based on crowd reaction alone, I think you put Dean Ambrose in it instead of Roman Reigns, but we have a long road ahead of us between now and WrestleMania 31. At the same time, I don't think WWE wants to be put in a situation they were last year, because you got to remember, Adam, last year the big plan was for Batista to win the World Heavyweight title, but the fans crapped on it because they felt that was WWE taking a spot away from Daniel Bryan. And the fans booed Batista at every arena across the country, every arena across the world. And then WWE had no choice but to put Daniel Bryan in the main event and have him win it. So I don't think WWE wants to be in the same situation again where they plan one thing, it upsets the viewers, and they're forced to change their mind. But, Adam, what are your thoughts on this?
All right, well, I definitely think we should definitely break this down. First of all, on the thoughts being forced, first of all, congratulations to the wrestling fans out there. Way to actually make an impact. That is what happens, what's best for business. What the fans think is best for business. They knew there was something about Daniel Bryan. As soon as you saw that Bray Wyatt-Daniel Bryan match at the Rumble, which I would probably put up there as well as a candidate for match of the year because those two were awesome. Daniel Bryan, those fans wanted nothing more than to see Daniel Bryan come out at the 30 spot. They wanted nothing more than to see him out there and win the Rumble. Batista got his well-deserved pop when he came back, was doing okay until the Rumble hit. Those fans at the Rumble, I believe, changed the course of what happened at WrestleMania. That one fan base did it. And I don't disagree of how it went down. Daniel Bryan was the right guy to do it. I think he was the guy. And the way it was set up at WrestleMania was perfect. From the whole Yes movement shutting down Raw for like 15, 20 minutes. If I had to go back to your question about booking a main event right now, I couldn't tell you, but I just got this very interesting idea. I've been a huge fan of Seth Rollins since he's debuted with The Shield. I have been a huge Seth Rollins mark because him working in the ring it's magical to see. There's something about him. It's that it factor that he has. He's got the promo skills. He's got the it factor. He's got the charisma. He's got the talent. He's got it all. And he can definitely be, if they keep him in that heel role, probably one of the top heels in the company, if not the top guy. But he has the money in the bank briefcase. Let's not forget this. And you put Dean Ambrose, what a reaction they're getting out of him. You know, my stepbrother said he's getting, like, he could be your next Austin with the way his character is. And he's just getting that far over. Do you do an Ambrose versus a Lesnar if it's going to be that way and he gets the push? Or do you do some way, shape, or form where Reigns or Ambrose takes the title, Lesnar destroys them, and then Rollins cashes in at WrestleMania? Setting up one heck of a show and then one heck of a fallout, because has the Money in the Bank briefcase ever been cashed in at WrestleMania on someone that was down? I don't.
It's not never been cashed in at WrestleMania.
That would be interesting to me. Do you have Rollins cash in? Let's just say everything stays the same. Triple H's idea of Reigns versus Lesnar. Reigns becomes the guy, takes the title, but then Lesnar just comes out and destroys him. Rollins runs down the ramp with the Money in the Bank briefcase, cashes it in, puts Reigns under the mat. Reigns gets his moment. He's established as the guy, but let's not forget the guy that has the briefcase and is the architect, as he's being called, and who, in storyline, is being said as the architect of why the Shield was formed and why it was destroyed. What a better way than to have the fallout from Reigns and Rollins, which we haven't seen yet because it's all been all Reigns and Ambrose. What better way than have it cashed in at WrestleMania, Rollins becomes the champion, Reigns is the guy, and then you just have that go at Extreme Rules.
You know, I would like that to happen maybe on another pay-per-view other than WrestleMania, just because if you're going to make Roman Reigns the guy, I really think you give him his moment. So if he's the guy to defeat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, you give him his moment. The next night on Raw, I think you set up the possibility of Seth Rollins cashing in on Roman Reigns. Because I can tell you right now, there's a lot of chatter about when Seth Rollins is cashing in that briefcase. In my opinion, he does not cash in that briefcase as long as Brock Lesnar is WWE champion.
No, I agree with that.
Storyline-wise, it doesn't make sense because the Authority made a deal with Paul Heyman to bring in Brock Lesnar as option C. So I don't think it would make sense for option B to kind of just try to cash in unless they work something out where Heyman and the Authority start feuding, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon because they don't want John Cena as champion. They don't want Daniel Bryan as champion. They don't want anybody else as champion unless there's a guy that they kind of that's in their back pocket. And more or less, Brock Lesnar is in the Authority's back pocket.
This Authority storyline has been phenomenal to watch. It's been great television. It really has. But I agree. As long as Lesnar is champion, it makes no sense whatsoever. Now, there was an interesting idea that was thrown out. My stepbrother Mikey and I, we talked back and forth. We had an interesting idea. What if you turn Cena heel at Night of Champions? What if Cena was the original plan C? The problem with that is Daniel Bryan isn't there. There's no one that could take the top face spot in the company right now. Reigns is not ready. Bray Wyatt, you'd have to do a quick turnaround with him, and I don't think he'd be the guy. If you had a Daniel Bryan type there, I could see that as a possible feasible option, and I like that because it would give Cena, oh my goodness, stop working your 500 day out of the 365 day of the year schedule. The man's a beast and doesn't slow down. And Cena's, he's what, mid-30s, if I'm not mistaken?
Oh, yeah, I think he's 37 years old.
So he's getting up there. In WWE, and you know, years ago I heard this talked about, they're suffering from a lack of veteran presence. So while everything, as long as Lesnar's champion, yeah, Rollins is not cashing that thing in. I could see that whole scenario happening on Raw. Reigns is the guy. I can see Lesnar coming out and destroying him and Rollins cashing in. I'd be fine with that. But in terms of the Shield, and I've asked several people this, and maybe you can give your thoughts, and fans below can comment down and they can tell us what they think. Out of the three members of the Shield, purely based off of if you didn't have anything else, you didn't hear that Reigns was the guy or that Ambrose is getting these big pops and they don't believe in him, Atlee, who do you think, out of the three of them, is the next megastar? Who would be the next Hogan, Cena, Austin, Rock, that type of star? For me, it's Seth Rollins.
If I hadn't heard anything or anything just about like who's going to be, if I just did not go to GoWreck.net, didn't read the newsletters, didn't read the dirt sheets, didn't talk about stuff like I am talking to you right now, my pick would have been Dean Ambrose, because before I even heard of who Dean Ambrose was and heard the hype on him, I was beyond impressed. He was the guy in the Shield that really captured my imagination and like really got my attention right away, because there's just something different about Dean Ambrose, the way he does things, the way he does promos, his mannerisms, the way he does moves, everything. Like, he is just one of those talents that doesn't come along every day, and he gets this business.
Exactly.
But at the same time, Roman Reigns, you know, he's that prototypical guy that WWE likes, and I think he's going to get a lot better between now and WrestleMania, because everybody harps on John Cena's five moves of doom. Well, if you really think about it, Roman Reigns has three moves right now, so he needs to get a few more moves. He needs to work on that charisma a little more. But the fans are liking him more and more. And I also think the reason why all three Shield members are going to be huge superstars before it's all said and done is because the way WWE booked them as the Shield. I mean, most times when WWE brings in a new act, they always have to kind of pay their dues as far as how they're scripted on television. They'll win a few matches here and there, but when they come across the big names, like a Cena, like a Orton, like an Undertaker, they don't get wins over them right away, because it's like, oh, well, they've only been on the roster for 3 months, so we can't have them beating the main event guys right away. They threw that out the window when they booked the Shield. They were like, you know what? These guys are three talented individuals that could be the future of our company, so we're going to book them as a threat. We're going to book them as a force to be reckoned with. And their very first match was at TLC 2012, and they faced Ryback, who was in the main event at that time, Daniel Bryan, and Kane, and they went over on those two. They beat them. And then a few months later at No Way Out or Elimination Chamber, they beat Ryback, John Cena, and whoever the third guy, and Sheamus. So they protected the Shield. They said, you know what, we're not going to do the usual, they can't beat everybody, they can beat some people. They were beating main eventers left and right from the moment they got on the roster, and that made people realize, damn, these guys are different than anybody else that's debuted so far. And the WWE has really done a good job of protecting their investments. And now that they're on their own, the fans are really digging what all three of them are doing right now.
Oh, I agree. All of these guys are future WWE World Champions. All of these guys are future top-tier guys. I just think, you know, people are saying Reigns is the next guy, the chosen one. Really? What, because he's prototypical? I heard a report, I believe, someone just compared Seth Rollins to Shawn Michaels. He could be the next Michaels. Think of, they've been coming. I mean, you can clearly see it. Ambrose looks like Austin-like. Rollins is HBK-like. And then there's Roman Reigns, who the company likes and the fans are starting to get behind. I like Reigns. He's got three moves, and I get a huge worry about him. Are we going to slap him with a five moves of doom set too and turn him into the next Cena where he does nothing but five moves of doom? Because Rollins and Ambrose, clearly from those two matches, have more than five moves. And that is what wrestling, I think, should be. They should be wrestling, not with big moves that get big pops, but good matches that get pops throughout the entire thing. That's my own opinion. I think you have two guys on Rollins and Ambrose right now that need to stay at the top of the card, that need titles. To be honest, I think Ambrose needs the world title more than Seth Rollins, because, yeah, he's over. Give him a title to let him be over. Rollins is going to be over briefcase, belt, no belt, doesn't matter. I just think there's something about Rollins. I think there's definitely something about Ambrose. Funny story, actually, about Dean Ambrose. He worked a dark match a few years ago when SmackDown was up in Manchester. My stepbrother and I went to go see it, and was sitting there.
Was that Manchester, New Hampshire?
Yeah, Manchester, New Hampshire, at the Verizon Wireless Arena, I believe. And he's working a dark match, and I forget who he was working it against. And I'm looking at this guy going, he's working a dark match. What is this, an indie guy? I didn't see much out of him in the dark match. And then you see him debut doing the Shield, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what a 180 degree improvement. He is something else. Those two deserve, and give those two a slammy for their match at Raw. Their match was phenomenal. So essentially for me, you know, being that, you know, more recent wrestling fan, but really after, and this is just let all your lovely listeners know as well, I have had the pleasure of actually seeing Mr. Atlee wrestle. I've had the pleasure of going on with him and, you know, Mr. Shane Daly, who's not with us today, going around and seeing some different independent shows. When you see an independent show, I got a completely different perspective from TV and starting to understand a bit more of the business, a bit more the terminology, and a bit more of, you know, understanding more of the rumors and how people's minds are thinking. I've gotten a fresh perspective on it. So I've gone from your casual fan that's like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they're doing that, to, oh my goodness, I can't believe they're doing that. Now what are we looking at next in story? Where are they going? And I'm having a lot of fun not only seeing what's in the ring, but to think of the stuff and storyline behind it. So I've gone from casual fan to not so much like internet fan, so to speak, but definitely real pure wrestling fan after getting a fresh perspective from seeing different independent shows. So in terms of that with the Shield, I guess for me that's why I'm more of a Rollins mark and I'm more of an Ambrose mark than I am for Reigns. Don't get me wrong, I love them all. But if I had to rank them on personal preference, I can't make a distinction right now on one and two because Rollins and Ambrose, after those two matches, I had Rollins up top, then Ambrose, then Reigns. Right now, Rollins and Ambrose are tied because I can't make a distinction after those two matches. But Reigns, I wish him a lot of luck if he's going to be the guy because he needs more promo skills. He needs more Koreans to work on that charisma. And he still has some work to do. But this, the potential is there.
I mean, I think it's safe to say that the future is bright for all three members of the Shield, no matter how you slice it. Before we go on to our next topic, I just want to quickly say, Gene Snitsky, you are an idiot. If you don't know what I mean, he was on Twitter recently complaining about the fact that WWE announces Seth Rollins at a mere 217 pounds. And Snitsky kind of goes, yeah, there's no way that guy's 217 pounds. He's 200 pounds at best. You know what, Gene Snitsky? You are a product of an archaic era in professional wrestling. You think just because you're 6'6", 300 pounds of solid muscle, that you should be in the main event. You should be headlining this, headlining that. You know what, my friend? The business has evolved. You haven't. Shut your mouth. Now, moving on, let's talk about the big news item that was at the top of the page at Gorick.net for the majority of the week. Daniel Bryan reportedly needs Tommy John surgery. Now, I am not a big baseball guy. However, when I watch ESPN SportsCenter and they talk about baseball players and their injuries, Tommy John surgery is something that always comes up as far as, you know, as far as not just being a surgery, but being that, ooh, that's not good at all. They speak about it in a somber tone when someone is announced as having Tommy John surgery. And the reports they're coming out is that Daniel Bryan is going to be out for 3 months as a result of Tommy John surgery. Now, this is before we go into it, we have to establish that this has been reported. It's reportedly, allegedly, if you will, that Daniel Bryan needs Tommy John surgery. It hasn't been confirmed, but a lot of people are reporting it. So there is it is a possibility he needs this because it was confirmed that he was losing feeling in his arm. So with the smoke, there's fire. However, we do have to talk about it because it looks like it may be a reality. Now, Adam, you are a big baseball guy, so you can elaborate on Tommy John surgery a lot more than I can. But I do want to talk about the three-month period that everybody's reporting about as far as Daniel Bryan taking time off. Now, when I hear people talk about on ESPN about Tommy John surgery, it sounds like they're out for at least a year, maybe longer. And people are saying 3 months for Daniel Bryan. He's only going to be out for 3 months. So, Adam, kind of bridge the gap, if you will, as far as what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. First, I know, Atlee, you mentioned something about The Shield, the WWE Network, which, by the way, if you have not got the WWE Network, you can get for just $9.99.
How much?
$9.99. And in case you didn't hear me one more time, because they love saying it, you can get the WWE Network for $9.99. Okay, plug over. I'm not getting paid for that, I promise you. But they just did a Shield special, if I'm not mistaken, right? Before we get the whole Daniel Bryan thing, you know, I thought I saw something about like the Shield special on, what was it, Wednesday, I believe.
Yes, Adam, you and I talked, excuse me, Adam, you and I talked about this before we went on the air about the Shield special. I don't want to spoil anything about the Shield special on the WWE Network because it is that good. The only thing I will say is they pulled the curtain back a lot more than they have done in most of their specials that they've produced on DVD or aired on the WWE Network. If you like good wrestling specials and you really like the Shield, watch that special. It is extraordinary. I'm not going to say anything else. Just take my word for it. You need to watch it.
All right. I'm excited. Now I'm going to have to go set some time aside and go watch it. But getting away, just going to transition back into that whole Daniel Bryan report. This is not confirmed by anybody, but it's been reported that he needs Tommy John surgery. I am a big baseball guy, a big football guy, but when you hear Tommy John surgery, for those of you, before we get into waiting periods, but for those of you that don't know what Tommy John surgery is, it's the UCL in your elbow. And I can't think of the terminology for it, but you think UCL. Don't think like ACL or MCL. Those are in your knees. That's something like when you get a torn knee, sometimes you tear an ACL, you tear an MCL, the meniscus is in there. But the UCL is an element in your elbow that needs to just, you get the surgery for it. And quite famously, the one who got the first surgery was Tommy John, a baseball pitcher, which was the surgery was named after him. The way baseball pitchers pitch, you know, with them pitching, let's face it, anywhere between 70 to 110 pitches on average, every 5 days, not counting warm-up pitches, not counting practices, and you're throwing at about, on average, about 90 to 100 miles an hour. Yeah, you put some wear and tear on your body.
I mean, think about that. 80 pitches at almost 100 miles an hour.
That's insane to me. But they do it. That's why they get paid the big bucks and these outrageous contracts. But they're well worth it. I mean, look at I'm a big Boston Red Sox guy. Huge Boston Red Sox fan. And for us Red Sox fans up here on the Northeast, the most notable recent of this, and I'm going to say the name and people don't get mad, John Lackey. Signed him here 5 years and I forget the amount, like $90 million or something. Got him for the first year, he was okay, and then there was something seriously wrong with him year two. Halfway through, you know, dealing several things, he had to get Tommy John surgery. He was out for a minimum of 1 year. Now, putting this in wrestling perspective, and from what's been reported, no wrestler has ever had Tommy John surgery before. It has not had to be needed. And Atlee can probably speak more to the specifics of it, but for a wrestler to have Tommy John surgery, I don't know what the timetable for that would be, but at best, we're not seeing Daniel Bryan for 9 months to a year. That would be my guess based off of what I see these pitchers go through, not to mention the rehab that they're going to have to go through to get back to 110%. So to me, this is not a good thing for Daniel Bryan.
I mean, a lot of people have been talking about how, Daniel Bryan will be back in 3 months because he's not throwing a baseball every 5 days, 80 times at 100 miles an hour. This is true. However, what most people don't realize is that when you take a bump in the ring, and when you take a bump, that means every time you're knocked down, whether it's by a punch or by a move, that's the wrestler taking a bump. And when wrestlers take bumps, they are trained to slap out so their palms hit the mat. That way, you're not putting as much pressure on your back. When you slap out after taking a bump, the impact hits your arms more than it hits your back. Don't worry, trust me, your back really gets, you know, shaken up by a bump, but you're slapping out to minimize the effect, the damage that could possibly happen on your back. So, if you just kind of wave your arms outward and slap out, you're still there's a lot of impact going onto your elbows, and that's where the Tommy John surgery is happening on the arm. So what a lot of people do is later in their career, when they don't slap out because they have an injured shoulder or an injured elbow or injured forearm, a broken hand, what have you, they'll stop slapping out. And they'll just bump on their back and just, you know, hope that nothing goes wrong. And what they'll do is, as a result, after a while, they'll wrestlers, especially older wrestlers, are really particular as to when they take bumps. Kind of just to go into perspective, the Honky Tonk Man, I worked the same independent show as Honky Tonk Man years ago, and that guy charges per bump. I don't think many promoters pay it, but on top of his fee, which is pretty high, he also charges per bump. He doesn't take bumps because his back has just been ravaged with bumps throughout his career. Mick Foley, for example, whenever he took bumps, and we talked about this, Adam, before we went on the air, he never slapped out completely. He always bumped with his elbows first. And after a while, he really messed up his elbows, and he just stopped slapping out with the bumps all the time, just landing on his back all the time. So there is a lot of impact going on with Daniel Bryan as far as the Tommy John surgery. If he is having Tommy John surgery, it may not take the full year that it does for a Major League Baseball player, but it's not going to be simply 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be 3 months. It's going to be more than that. Because you can remember, too, Daniel Bryan is a babyface, but he's a smaller wrestler. So he's constantly wrestling guys much larger than him and more powerful than him. So therefore, he's getting thrown a lot. He's getting thrown around a lot.
Right.
But also, I think there should be a good time for Daniel Bryan personally, in my opinion, to take off as much time as he needs. I know he's a fiery competitor. He wants to get back in. He was the top babyface of the company. They got taken away from him. Because let's be honest. Daniel Bryan has had crap luck since he won the WWE title. He won the WWE title at WrestleMania. At WrestleMania 30. The dream scenario. And then after a month of crappy booking with Kane.
Oy.
Crappy booking. Oy. Unfortunately, he had the untimely death of his father. He has to have neck surgery. They strip him of the title. He's losing feeling in his arm, and now he might need Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm.
He has had crap luck. And what's bad about this is that no matter how over you are, if you are out of sight for a long time, eventually you become out of mind. And with The Shield becoming more popular as three individual acts, Daniel Bryan may not have much to come back to as far, because he's not going to, at this point, Daniel Bryan's not going to be the top star when he comes back. He'll be one of the top stars, but he's not going to be the top guy when he comes back. I mean, that's evident. And the more popular The Shield gets, the less likely he's ever going to get that main spot back to be the WWE champion. Because if the rumors are true that Roman Reigns is the guy and Roman Reigns is going to win the title at WrestleMania, that's the WWE stamp saying Roman Reigns is our guy to lead us into the next generation. Daniel Bryan's not getting that belt back. I mean, a heel like Seth Rollins has a chance of getting that belt at some point, but not Daniel Bryan. But I really think this would be a good chance for Daniel Bryan to heal all of his nagging injuries and then come back fresh. But at the same time, he's a competitor. He had that top spot. He's lost it. He wants it back in the worst way. It's kind of similar to a few, like 2008, where Jeff Hardy, John Cena was out with a neck injury, and people were talking about how he wouldn't be back for a year. And then slowly but surely, Jeff Hardy was becoming the guy. And all of a sudden, John Cena came back unexpectedly, months earlier than he should have, at the Royal Rumble in Madison Square Garden and won it. And people were like, oh, John Cena healed a lot quicker than most. No. John Cena was not feeling better that night. I guarantee you, John Cena saw his spot slowly losing it to Jeff Hardy. And John Cena said, damn, I'm not losing my spot. The hell with this. And he came back. But Daniel Bryan has a lot of nagging injuries, and because he's a smaller wrestler and he's getting thrown around more, he's going to get banged around more than most, but he's the toughest nails guy. The fans love him. He's a wrestler that not only fans, but the wrestlers in the locker room respect because he can work. He respects the business, loves the business, has a passion for what he does. And I as a fan, I hate seeing and hearing. Oh, plus, his house got robbed recently.
Yeah.
And he subdued the perpetrator. But who knows if he got injured during that? So, I mean, they just had crap luck after crap luck. And I wish the Daniel Bryan family and his wife, Brie, nothing but the best. And I really hope that Daniel Bryan can come back. Because Daniel Bryan, even though he's probably not going to get the top spot when he comes back, Adam, and tell me if you agree with this, he at least deserves a chance at getting that top spot back. He deserves a chance.
I completely agree with you 100%. To be perfectly honest, and listeners out there and everyone else listening to this, by all means, don't get me wrong. If the report is 3 months, great. But from all
experience... Oh, absolutely. 3 months would be amazing.
3 months would put him, if he got it today, it'd put him around Survivor Series TLC. Let him take 5 months. Let him come back at the Rumble. If it's going to be easier for a wrestler that doesn't have to rehab as viciously as a pitcher would, by all means, I am all for it. I'm all for him coming back. I'm all for him getting his one-on-one shot for that title after WrestleMania. And to be honest with you, if the booking Reigns is the guy, I don't care who they're booking as the guy, because there's still so much surrounding WrestleMania right now between Vince and Triple H on what they think that main event should be. At this point, I don't care. I want what's best for Daniel Bryan. I understand the fact of when Cena came back, he was losing it to Hardy. And I'm just thinking of that for a second. Jeff Hardy is the next star over Cena. Oh, that would have been something for the wrestling history books. But if it's 3 months, I'm all for that report. They are a report. There's no set timetable. All I know is when a pitcher usually gets it, he's out for a year. They write him off. They put him on, you know, IR, the 60-day DL, with just let him heal. And don't forget, baseball teams have got phenomenal, phenomenal workout facilities, rehab facilities, and top doctors. Wrestling fans do as well. They have their own personnel. But I don't know if WWE has the payroll of some of these other baseball teams that have these facilities that specifically go to rehab from them and that can be sent to specialists and that can do all these. I don't know. I can't speak to it. Within the weeks to come, I hope we find out more. But if it's 3 months, I'm all for it. But, Ali, I agree with you. I think it's time for Matt to take time off. 10 years on the independent scene. WWE knew they were going to get some nagging injuries with him. I just don't think WWE saw this coming.
No, nobody did. And if they did see it coming, I can tell you right now, as much as the fans were saying yes, 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 he would not have won the title at WrestleMania.
I agree.
Now, let's move on to the final topic of the evening, TNA Impact Wrestling. It was actually just announced that Spike TV has extended their partnership with TNA throughout the end of 2014. The rumors are going out right now. It's been reported that Spike TV is not going to renew TNA's contract for 2015. The contract actually officially expires in the middle of October, but Spike TV has not only moved the show to Wednesday nights, which is a smart move in my opinion, but also they've extended it throughout the rest of 2014, so fans of TNA Impact will get to see what they're doing throughout the rest of the year at least. And Adam, You and I, we go on the internet, we read reports from Gerwick.net, and we look at the message boards, we look at the comment section. A lot of people crap on TNA. I am also guilty of crapping on TNA, but you are a fan. You really like TNA wrestling, so I just want you to elaborate on your thoughts on TNA as well as what the future possibly holds them with Bully Ray leaving, with Kurt Angle's exit imminent, and their financial problems to boot. Adam, lay it on us.
Oh, wait, did anyone just hear that? Was that Shane Daly from, like, afar going, oh, great, they're talking about TNA again?
Shane Daly has probably pressed the stop button now because we're talking about TNA.
You know, I have been a fan of TNA It was, you know, back, you know, again, this is me just being – when I was the casual wrestling fan, I heard of this other company. And I think the first TNA show I watched was like a New Year's Eve show, and they were doing some knockout special or something. But that was back when I was a casual fan. As I got some more appreciation of the business and what they're actually doing in the ring, the art form that it is, oh, I love these wrestlers. Don't get me wrong. I'm a huge WWE guy, but I love the wrestling in TNA. You get, I mean, I'm a fan of the greatest man that ever lived. Huge fan of Austin Aries. Huge fan of Bobby Roode. AJ Styles. Samoa Joe. Magnus. All of these guys in the ring, and it's not like they're there to do a couple moves and get them over and then get to the next segment. You see wrestling. Before we started this podcast today, I was just trying to catch up on Hardcore Justice. Oh my goodness, those first two matches were insane. I wouldn't throw them as match of the year quite yet, but that's how you book a card. You let the wrestlers go and wrestle. Austin Aries said, I think it was somewhere between, I think it was a year to 3 years ago, I can't remember the time. He was said, I think it was actually 2012, as he was getting for his world title shot, wrestling is ready for the next boom period. And I thought to myself, okay, I like both things. Where's the boom? Then you look at The Shield. You look at guys like Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. And you get divas like AJ, Paige, Sasha Banks, Charlotte. You've got TNA guys like Austin Aries and Magnus. And Magnus, a guy that's in his prime. He's put on some great matches. Bobby Roode, AJ Styles, I mean, he's up there. But there are great wrestlers out there right now. If TNA does not get that TV deal with somebody, that's going to be a shame. It's going to be an absolute shame. Their product, since they have done these New York City tapings, has been phenomenal. They've taken a lot of crap since Slammiversary last year when it was in Boston. My stepbrother and I went to go see the show. I thought it was one of the best pay-per-views of the year between WWE and TNA, period. Whatever was out there, that was one of the best shows of the year. That last Knockout Standing match may have been up there for Match of the Year. That Ultimate X match. They have great talent that can produce a great product when there's proper booking. But that Bound for Glory last year was a disaster. And that's when the criticism of TNA took off. They're like, because how do you go from possible pay-per-view of the year? I put that up there competing at WrestleMania last year. And we all know WrestleMania 29 was, it was a bridge WrestleMania to 30. But
agreed.
You go from Slammiversary, one of the better pay-per-views they've had in a long time, to Bound for Glory. Yeah, I know you have the whole Aces and Eights storyline, and that just ended up being a rolling mess. But what a disaster. And then you bring an MVP back in your overseas tapings. TNA has got a great fan base in the UK. Great fan base. The Hydro Arena, packed. They packed the Hydro when the Hydro just opened beginning of the year or sometime last year. They packed it in Glasgow. They went to London. They packed the stadium. Fans like the product. But the problem with the product, and I think it goes back to the funds, wrestlers are not getting paid well. They're not getting paid on time. There's issues backstage. You have everyone that's giving Dixie Carter criticism of how she's running the company. I don't agree with everything that she's done. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think it is time for a change. You had Jeff Jarrett and Toby Keith that wanted to buy out TNA. And then it ended up being that they couldn't do it because the condition was the money was right. From what all the reports that I heard, money was right. But the contingency is Dixie Carter had to remain on screen. And Jeff and Toby said no. And they walked away. And now GFW is starting. Plug for them. Global Force Wrestling, which is another interesting concept in and of itself. But I'm worried for the wrestlers. They've put on a great product. Bully Ray has cut some of the best promos I've ever seen. That man can talk with the best of them. I'd love to put him and Paul Heyman back in the ring and let those two just have a promo war against each other. He's done some of the best work I've ever seen him do, and I've looked at some of his older matches. I've looked at some of the stuff when they were in 3D back in like 2009 and 2010 when I was starting to get into it. The man can work. He looks phenomenal. I think he's dropped, I can't even think of how many pounds. But with him leaving, Kurt Angle getting ready to leave, and D-Von, who I'm surprised came back, and he's getting ready to leave, that's a huge blow to TNA. Because you're losing three top guys. I understand they're older. I still think TNA's future is very bright. But it's very bright if they book them properly. And if they start doing things backstage properly. That's my fear and concern. I'm not concerned about the TV deal so much. I'm concerned about the backstage politics and how it's being handled and run from the top down.
Well, I would be very concerned with the TV deal, Adam, because the majority of the money TNA makes is from how much money Spike TV pays them for their operating costs and everything else. Because if there is no TV deal for Spike TV or TNA, rather come 2015, they're essentially out of business.
They are. And
plus, if they go to another network is going to look at their portfolio for Spike TV. They're going to say, okay, they average about at 1.1 or 1.2 or sometimes 1.3 million viewers.
Which they seem to be getting recently since these New York City tapings. Their ratings
exactly.
have been spiking.
But it stays within a certain plateau. It never goes higher than a 1.3, and it's been that way since they've been on Spike TV. And also, other networks are going to see that as, okay, they haven't grown much. They have a very loyal audience, but the audience hasn't grown. And they're going to look at that and say, okay, we might make you an offer, but another network is not going to probably offer TNA as nearly as much money as Spike TV is paying them. Also, another network is not going to help them offset certain costs and to help pay the salaries of a Kurt Angle, pay the salaries of a Sting, pay the salary of a Hulk Hogan, because Spike TV stopped doing that. And as a result, no more Sting, no more Hogan, Angle's gone pretty soon, and a lot of the wrestlers' futures with TNA is as far as going elsewhere to WWE is not that good, because low-key, he left WWE because he wasn't being pushed to how he thought he should have been pushed, so he left. They ain't going to welcome him back. They don't need him back. Bobby Roode tried going to WWE. He sent feelers out, and Triple H said he wasn't interested in Bobby Roode.
Big mistake.
Bully Ray. They're not interested in Bully Ray.
I can.
That's come out. They're not interested in Bully Ray. Actually, because.
I can see why.
Well, also, Bully Ray has a lot of enemies in that locker room. Because Bully Ray is a guy that is not easy to get along with in the locker room. And Batista, if you read Batista's book, Animal Unleashed, he opens up about how much of a nice guy D-Von is, how much of a jerk Bully Ray is. And also, it's been reported that Randy Orton has issues with Bully Ray. And if Randy Orton has issues with that, with the talent possibly coming into the company, guess what? They're not coming into the company. If TNA goes out of business, Ken Kennedy is not coming back to the company.
Nope.
There's no way they're bringing back Kurt Angle, even though
nope.
Kurt Angle's delusional right now if they think they're bringing him back. Even as a part-time wrestler, they're not bringing him back because that guy is on self-destruct mode, and WWE, they do not want an Olympic gold medal self-destructing on their watch. They don't want that to happen,
no.
and I agree with them. But one guy I think WWE would really benefit from booking is Magnus. I mean, if you think about that, Magnus is in his prime. He's had a taste of the main event spotlight with TNA, and his look is what WWE looks for. He looks like a superstar. He's from England as well. So I really believe that's one of the, if WWE had their pick, I think Magnus would be the first guy they would go after as far as talent. Now, another name we haven't talked about is Samoa Joe. Now, Samoa Joe and Cena got into the business together. So I know for a fact Samoa Joe would probably get a job with WWE because John Cena would probably push for him. But the difference is Samoa Joe has a lot of detractors because of his body type. And WWE, they're not going to push Samoa Joe if they bring him in as the ass-kicking machine that he's been in the indies. And the ass-kicking machine has been in Ring of Honor and in TNA.
They have Bray Wyatt for that. Look at Bray Wyatt when you talk about body type.
But he's going to be – Samoa Joe is going to be different. He's going to be a different Samoa Joe, probably a different name. So my question is, Samoa Joe's been doing the same ass-kicker type gimmick very well, I might add, but doing the same gimmick for 10 years. Goes to WWE, they're going to have him do something completely different. And if they have him do something different, does he sink or does he swim?
Samoa Joe? I unfortunately think with the WWE beat the mid-card. And I hate to say that. I love Samoa Joe. I understand he's almost like he's got like a 5 move set, but man, the way he comes across it, you don't care. You just don't care.
And just think about this. WWE did not want to sign AJ Styles.
That's a huge mistake right there.
Well, they offered him a developmental deal because they want everybody going through the NXT system, but AJ Styles is kind of like, hey, I'm worth more money in Japan on the indies than a low-ball developmental deal, and he's 37 years old.
And he's
having the matches of his career right now in Japan.
I got to see some of those matches I've heard
about. Really
do.
Go on YouTube. It is extraordinary. And plus, the gloves are off in Japan. There's no rules about, don't do this, don't do that. They want every match to be amazing.
They want to see you wrestle. It's the wrestling business. But just for a second, going back to, and then I'd like to get into a few things. First of all, Bully Ray, man's phenomenal. He looks phenomenal. Ever since, he lost the weight, he looks great. The promos are awesome. The Aces and Eight angle was good when it started. It was what the Nexus should have been. It lasted long.
I gotta disagree with you on that, Adam.
Well, the way the Nexus came in and did it, I love the Nexus, but what they turned the Nexus into, Barrett should have been world champion 3 months after the Nexus debuted.
Oh no, I agree. The Nexus started off strong and ended horribly, but I never thought the Aces and Eights angle was any good.
I thought it was for a few months longer than Nexus, but it dried on me quickly. It took that Aces and Eights angle should have been run for 6 months and ended at the first lockdown, and that's where it should have ended, not dragged on for another year. That was painful to watch. That was like the Immortal angle that personally I think did TNA in for a year. That Immortal angle with Hogan and Bischoff was but that's a whole nother story for another time. But
Adam, let me ask you a question, though. Being that you are an avid TNA fan, you're currently watching the product, and we're currently in the midst of the New York TV tapings, which I agree with you have been awesome. I really do like and very much enjoy what TNA has been doing in New York. But Bully Ray has been positioned as the top babyface of the company. He's gone. So now, the next time they start filming TV, they don't have the top babyface. They got to push somebody new, in your opinion, on the roster now. Who does TNA push as their new top babyface and why? Do you go with the safe bet with Jeff Hardy?
No.
Or do you pick somebody else?
No. I love Hardy. I love what he does. Hardy's probably on my next list of people that are going to be out when his contract's done, because I don't think they'll be able to afford him either. It's a toss-up for me right now between Austin Aries and Bobby Roode. You start one of them. They did it with Eric Young for a little bit. Eric Young definitely has the crowd reaction. I like what Eric Young does in the ring. He reminds me of Daniel Bryan, huge risk-taker. If it were me, safe bet is Bobby Roode. The more exciting man to be the top face is Austin Aries. because when Austin Aries steps into a ring, he gives you 125% every match. It doesn't matter if it's a five-minute match. You're going to get something special out of him. That match that he had with Rude at Destination X when he won the title was awesome. The rematch with Rude was awesome. I definitely think it's one of those guys. Magnus, they've switched back to a heel. I'm a huge fan of Magnus. But TNA is in a really interesting spot. I like watching them. I enjoy different kinds of wrestling products. That's why I go to some indie shows. That's why I still watch TNA, regardless of the criticism it takes. And I criticize them a lot. Don't get me wrong here, fans. I criticize TNA just as much as the next guy based off of backstage stuff and booking and whatnot. Some of the booking they do is great. Some of it, to me, makes no sense. But when it comes to wrestling, yeah, they're the product to me you watch for wrestling. And then when the Shield came in, I'm like, okay, now they got competition. Especially when you're going to get Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville and all these other guys coming up. I really think if Triple H gets full control of WWE, there's not a wrestling company in the world that's going to be able to compete with WWE. And personally, I think WWE and Raw will start drawing fours, pluses for numbers a week, instantaneously. Because when you let these guys wrestle, you're going to get that Attitude Era fan base back. You're going to get newer fans that are just going to be like, oh, so wrestling is a sport. It's not just sports entertainment. Yeah, what they do and put their bodies in the line. We talked about Daniel Bryan and UCL surgery. Possible UCL surgery. For Tommy John surgery. Come on. They are putting their bodies on the line for the sake of the fans. And because they just love the business. Atlee, you know, being in the business, you wouldn't have gone in the wrestling business if you didn't love professional wrestling.
Absolutely. I mean, you always hear the term, you know, mark referred around, and like all wrestlers are marks. I mean, let's just put that out there. All wrestlers are marks because we love the business. We love it to such an extreme that, you know, people enter the business, go to wrestling school, you know, get their foot in the door and try to become part of this wonderful business. Now, going back to, you know, the TNA deal, I firmly believe that if TNA is going to pick a new star, they can't do it right away as far as the new babyface, but I actually go with MVP, and I'll tell you why. Now, the safe bet is Jeff Hardy, but Jeff Hardy, his contract is probably going to be up in about 6 months, and they're not going to re-sign him because he costs way too much money. And the thing is, you don't want to be in a Bully Ray situation where you're booking somebody only for him to be gone in a few months. You don't want that. I think you've already seen what Bobby Roode can do in the top spot. I think you've already seen what Austin Aries can do in the top spot. MVP, yeah. He's over. I mean, that guy is over. And when he was a babyface at WWE, he was super over. Now, if they can find a good storyline in a way that makes sense to turn him babyface, maybe you have Kenny King and Bobby Lashley turn on MVP, which would make sense because Kenny King and Bobby Lashley, for the most part, doing all the work, and MVP is the mouthpiece. So you kind of have them turn on MVP, gets that sympathy, kind of panders to the fans again. And plus, you have MVP signed a 2-year deal.
I thought he signed a 1-year deal. I thought it was a contingency deal for a year to see what would happen.
No, he announced on Twitter a while ago that it's going to be 2 years.
Okay, but I couldn't.
And the thing is, they didn't
MVP in that spot if that's the case.
Because they have him for a while. They have him longer than anybody else. And plus, it's been proven that when you put him as a top babyface, people listen. People react. People watch. And I really think that could be the way to go. I don't think they're going to do that, but I think that's the way to go. But the next TV tapings are going to be very interesting because the spoilers will be posted on GoWork.net, and we'll know long in advance before it airs on television who the new babyface is. That's actually going to be a big thing going into Bound for Glory because that's the WrestleMania of TNA.
Can I just say one thing about Bound for Glory? Why Japan?
Honestly, I can tell you why.
Go for it.
It's cheaper.
But how,
Russell won in Japan. Their partnership with the Great Muta, they're furting half the bill.
Oh, I can see that, but here's an interesting problem. Time constraints. If it's airing at your usual 8 p.m. Sunday time slot, what does that convert to in Japan?
Oh, there's a 14-hour time difference, so by the time you and I wake up here in the States, the spoilers will already be on the internet. But the thing is, TNA does not get that many people buying their pay-per-views. In fact, I'll even venture to say the only reason TNA is still on pay-per-view is because they have a contract with the various cable and satellite providers that they have to honor. If it wasn't for that contract, I guarantee you they would not be on pay-per-view because live pay-per-views are very expensive. Just running a pay-per-view at all is very expensive, and I guarantee you they would be out of the pay-per-view business if it wasn't for those contracts. And they figured, hey, our last pay-per-view of the year, Bound for Glory, our biggest show of the year, which is normally the show we put the most money into, let's partner up with the promotion in Japan that we've been working with, so therefore they pay half the bill. Plus, there's going to be a lot of Japanese stars on the show as well, so they found a good situation.
If you're going to have Japanese wrestlers on the show and you're doing it with Wrestle One, make it 4 hours. I'm sorry, you have a talent roster, which I agree with the cuts they've had done, not with some of the certain wrestlers, but the size they have for that company. You want to keep it the size they have because it keeps almost everyone involved. I mean, you look at the comparisons between TNA and WWE's roster. TNA made the right decision to cut back their roster. Great move on their part because they couldn't fit everyone in on one show unless they wanted with the two shows, which is not happening. But WWE's got such a talent roster. Two shows, and SmackDown is anyone watch SmackDown? Any of you fans out there watch SmackDown, and you just do like I have done and go to WWE.com and look at the results?
Well, I go to Gerwick.net
to look
at the results personally. But, yes, I feel what you're saying, Adam. But I think we're going to kind of wrap this up because we've been going over an hour. But let me get your opinion on one more thing before we wrap this up. Even though all the shows until September 25th are already in the can, as far as being filmed for TNA, if Bobby Lashley's fighting on Bellator coming up on September 5th, which will be live on Spike TV, so Bobby Lashley's going to be the World Heavyweight Champion going into Bellator. If Bobby Lashley gets his ass kicked in the cage and loses, does TNA take the belt off of him as soon as possible, or do they just go, eh, oh well, who cares? Pretend it didn't happen.
I think If he gets his butt handed to him in Bellator, I don't think it's going to really translate much with TNA. I'm actually quite proud that Lashley got his title shot, even though that if it wasn't for MVP's meniscus injury, his torn meniscus, MVP would have been champion at Slammiversary, and I'd be just fine with that. But I'm quite happy Bobby Lashley, who's never held the world to the TNA world title before. I don't think he held it in WWE either.
No, he did not. Former U.S. champion at WWE, but not a former World Heavyweight champion.
About time he's world champion. But I think he gets to take it off from a Bound for Glory, and I think you put that next face on with Bound for Glory. That's just my own opinion. Personally, I'm a huge fan of EC3. I was a huge fan. I was a huge fan of Derek Bateman back in WWE.
You're the only one, Adam. You're the only one. You're not the only one. There may be five of the people out there.
You're hurting me. I've heard lots of people, even other ones out in the business, that have said there's something special about him. Even some of the guys in locker room, like, yeah, I think EC3, if he keeps developing the way he is, maybe not so much as a heel, but his work in the ring, I think he could be the one that WWE is going to regret they let get away.
You've heard it here first. Adam Cohn supports EC3. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for this episode of the Body Slam Podcast. Adam, I truly want to thank you for coming on the air with me today and talking wrestling with me. It was really, really fun. Hope we get to do it again. So, Adam, tell the fans where you're at. Any social media you might want to plug?
Yeah, I'll plug my Twitter. I'm hardly ever on there, but I'm on Twitter. You're more than welcome to shoot me a message at AdamWX21. You're more than welcome to follow me on Twitter. I keep my Facebook personal, No offense, guys. Keep my Facebook personal. But definitely follow me on Twitter. Hit me up with any other ideas. My friends and I are getting actually our own podcast together. Atlee, I want to thank you for having me on the Body Slam podcast. I hope to be able to work with you guys again, maybe on a more regular basis. But yeah, a few friends of mine had an idea to get our own podcast together, and currently that's in the works. But got to do a few, iron out some kinks there, but be looking for us real soon.
Absolutely. And Adam, again, once again, thank you. Fans, if you want to reach out, hit out the, go to Twitter and go to the Body Slam Pod. Well, I can't even speak. The Body Slam Podcast, which is on Twitter. Just search it, Google it, Body Slam Podcast. Follow us. We'd love to hear your feedback about the show. Also, hit me up on my own personal Twitter account at Midnight Logic Go. And if you want to hear any of my ramblings about the world of professional wrestling, keep it, you know, go to my own personal blog, which is thegreenscreen.net. Talk about movies, comics, professional wrestling, MMA. But if you also want to read some of my columns, keep it locked here at gorick.net for all your pro wrestling news and needs. For Adam Cohn, this is Atlee Green. We're signing off, suckers. We'll see you next time on the Body Slam Podcast.